the proposal for an Indianapolis casino. Does it make sense? The latest crisis at DCS, how a broken bridge has the governor looking for road money and a big bill for state house security. That plus a mayor arrested, Tom Brady insulted on beer cans, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 14, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Full House Resorts, the owner of a riverboat casino on the Ohio River in Rising Sun, Indiana, proposed a $650 million development at the Indianapolis airport that would include a casino. It wants to move half the gaming tables from Rising Sun to Indianapolis. That would create a new casino that would be the linchpin in a proposal called American Place. This video shows what the finished product might look like. It calls for a hotel, a theater, shopping, and restaurants to go along with a seasonal plaza and the casino. Full House CEO Dan Lee knows he needs to convince a lot of people that it's the right thing to do.
We met with a few people already who were really skeptical. And after half an hour, they're like, huh, you know, it might work, you know. $85 million a year in state and local taxes, pretty big number.
It's a creative idea, but just not for Indiana, and certainly not at this time.
And that state representative, Terry Austin, is the plan for American Place realistic? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, managing editor of the Indianapolis Business Journal, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. Mike McDaniel, is that idea going anywhere?
No.
Not at all.
Do you have any more questions?
No, there are lawmakers. There are lawmakers who are saying it's dead on arrival.
I think that what you've got going on, I think Terry Austin probably said it correctly when she said that there's no appetite for that right now. And the legislature spent last summer and fall studying the gaming industry in Indiana with the idea of trying to make us more competitive going forward with the emergence of ongoing gaming opportunities in surrounding states. And then they passed in the last session a comprehensive gaming change with the idea of doing that. So that affected the boats on the river, on the lake, French Lick, and the two racinos. And so those properties haven't even had time to do the things that the legislature just approved. And so I don't see the legislature coming up to this session of the legislature and opening up the gaming law again and making this kind of dramatic change that would change the balance of everything that they just did. So I think it's probably dead on arrival at this point.
So lawmakers would be uncomfortable with this, but casino competitors would put up some pretty stiff opposition.
Oh, there's no question. We obviously have one too many licenses in Indiana, and that's what's going on here. They can't make a go of it down in Rising Sun. But when you see that the governor tied himself up in knots the last session, and the legislature in knots, to make sure that the 2021 changes took effect after he was out of office instead of in January when he was still in office, he's not going to touch this with a 10-foot pole, and I don't think the legislature will either.
Well, I guess the legislature only if the airport authority goes along with it, and they have other proposals, although they won't say what they are or how many at this point.
Yeah, because you have to look at the best use for that particular piece of property. Land like that in that kind of a location doesn't become available very often. And so if that's not the right project, then the airport commission, I'm sure, would not recommend it even going forward. So they have to pass through that hurdle before they can even really think about going to the legislature. And I think Ann and Mike are probably right in their pessimism about that hurdle. That's probably pretty tall.
I want to play devil's advocate.
It's a grand proposal.
They put a lot of money and work into this proposal. I don't think they would do that if they didn't think they had some chance, at least, of getting some kind of serious look at it. In addition, if you look at the casino map, that part of the state is actually a part where a lot of casinos would be less affected than in other areas. They did a very strategic thing by proposing to not add gaming positions, but to move existing gaming commissions to Indianapolis. And when you start talking about millions of dollars, you just can't discount what might happen in gaming. Gaming is one of those areas where you think you might know, and then all of a sudden something bubbles up. And if those guys get together with the folks in Gary who want to move one of their licenses or do something, you never know what kind of coalitions
develop. They have tried unsuccessfully to move a license. One of the interesting things, though, despite the grand scope of this project, Full House is saying they'll take care of the casino and the plaza and the fountain, and they need partners to do the rest. So,
well, the irony of this particular proposal is that these folks were trying their best to make sure there were no changes in Central Indiana with the changes that were made last session.
They fought live dealers.
They fought anything that would supposedly affect them on the river. And now they're coming up here and saying, oh, yeah, but we would put something
here. But that's typical in the gaming industry today, where these companies own casinos right across the river. They fight for things in one state. They fight against things in another place. So, I mean, I don't see anything unusual there.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is an Indianapolis casino a good idea? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, should Planned Parenthood continue to receive government funding? 70% said yes, 25% said no, 5% said it's too soon to tell. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The governor this week unveiled a plan to deal with a new crisis in the Department of Child Services. The announcement that 113 caseworkers will be hired follows the hiring of an additional 100 caseworkers earlier this year. Nevertheless, most caseworkers have caseloads that exceed the limits spelled out in state law. Mike Pence took action on the day before the State Budget Committee did an annual review of the DCS. The new hires will cost the state more than $7 million.
We have both the authority and the ability to provide these resources immediately to the Department of Child Services.
Because we don't know what's coming through the door, and because we're a responsive agency, the statute says we have to respond. We don't have the option. You know what? We don't want to be out of compliance. We're not going to come and pick up Johnny with cigarette burns. You can keep him. That's not our option.
And that's DCS Director Mary Beth Bonaventura. And Delaney, is this being handled well?
It is typical of Mike Pence. There's no leadership at all here, and no competence even. We lurch from crisis to lawsuit to crisis to lawsuit, whether it's BMV, collapsing bridges, or DCS. We know we have a problem. We know that it's understaffed. They have a 30% turnover. We're not protecting children. They're dying, and he sits on a surplus. No, it's not being handled correctly.
Well, Mary Beth Bonaventura says the problem is a 26% increase in the number of abused and neglected children.
Over the last year, 26% increase. And a lot of that's driven by the heroin epidemic that's not only in Indiana but all over the United States. And the legislature passed a law that determines how many caseloads a caseworker can have, and so they have to meet that standard. So they added 100 in March, as you said, and now the new study indicates that they need at least 113, I think it is. And so they're doing that. But interesting about this is that the Indiana standard is actually tougher than the national standard. The national organization that sets these standards recommends 17 families per caseworker. The Indiana standard by law is 17 children per caseworker, and there's a huge difference there because most of the time these families have multiple children involved, and so they're meeting the need. He's doing what they said they were supposed to do based on what the legislature put in law, and so they're going to keep doing that as they have to increase the numbers. They will. They've done it every time. He's put 400 caseworkers in since Mike Pence has been in office.
Mary Beth, he doesn't pay them. And he makes fun of all state workers. You wonder why they have a 30% turnover.
They get paid about $35,000. Mary Beth Bonaventura said if you went by the national standards, if you counted families instead of children, that they would be in compliance.
Well, this is a much bigger problem. You talked about the heroin problem. The fact that there have been problems with caseloads through Republican administrations, through Democratic administrations, with not getting paid enough, with high turnover rates. It has been a special problem of late. But the bigger issue is, when is someone going to take the larger look at why is the caseload up 26%? What do we need to do as a state to create a culture where we're not sending so many children into the to the child system?
And again, the DCS director told the State Budget Committee today that anecdotally they believe it to be drugs, but they don't have any hard evidence.
And that is a big problem. I think that you're exactly right, Leslie, when you talk about the underlying problems, because I'm sure drugs, methamphetamines, heroin, all these other drugs that have become so prevalent is a big driver. But why are people doing those drugs? They don't have jobs. They don't have a sense of purpose. The economy's not performing for them. They are not able to participate fully. And so they turn to things like this, which are diversions and problems, and it affects their entire family and therefore the entire state. Until and unless we improve everything else, the economy, education, then we're going to struggle with this, because it's an endemic problem when you have that kind of situation.
Still with state government, the governor said this week that he will consider spending part of the state surplus on roads. It may be a reaction to Indiana Democrats who accused the Republican governor of ignoring problems that include the closed Lafayette Bridge on I-65. Meantime, the governor told a town hall meeting at the state fair that he expects the 2017 budget session of the General Assembly to be what he called an infrastructure session. Afterward, he said he hopes a public timeline of when the Lafayette Bridge will be open can be released soon. In fact, it was today. It'll be 4 to 6 weeks. He said the bridge is likely sinking as a result of construction work that damaged an aquifer, and he said the bridge was scheduled to be replaced next spring.
The economic impact is very significant. This is a major artery of commerce for the state of Indiana, and we're going to work 24/7 to determine how quickly we can get that back open to the public.
But also, I just believe roads mean jobs.
John Katzenberger, how serious are our infrastructure problems?
Well, it's not a surprise, because this has been looked at very intensely for a long time now, sort of like the previous issue we were talking about, but it's very serious. There are hundreds of bridges in Indiana that could very easily be in the same situation that the one on I-65 is in. We have had a problem. It's not really a problem, but major moves allowed the legislature and the governors to not address this on a holistic basis. And so we don't really have a plan going forward for addressing our transportation needs, which is really a big problem. And until they get realistic about hard issues like funding these roads on a longer term basis, then we are going to have this problem, and it's going to hurt us.
We're not yet 2 months into a new two-year state budget, and he's talking about possibly using the surplus for this. Is that surprising?
Well, no, I don't really think it is. I mean, anytime you have a sort of crisis like this, you're going to start talking about things like that. And there's been a discussion for some time now that 2016, 2017 would be a time to really take this infrastructure problem seriously. I mean, this has been building, and it's not an Indiana problem. It's a national problem. Roads are built based on gas taxes, and gas taxes as cars get more efficient, mm-hmm. gas tax revenue goes down in relative terms.
And driving
goes up, and the needs keep going up. And as a result, there's a long-term funding issue, and as John said, they have to address it. And, you know, we were talking before the show, Mike said, you know, this is a tough thing to do right before an election, and there's always an election. And so at some point, legislators are going to have to take this seriously and figure out what to do next and, you know, push aside some of their concerns about even just restructuring taxes.
You see a gas tax in our future?
Well, you know, I think they're going to have, there's no question they're going to have to deal with how they're going to fund highways going forward. That's something, as Leslie said, everybody's agreed on. In this particular case, it did happen because they were expanding that part of the interstate, which is something that the legislature put extra money in the budget to do. That's what happened here. That's why they're in the situation they're in. So they're spending the money. They've been spending money on highways for a good while. I talked to Senator Kinley yesterday. He said, we've spent a record amount of money on highways in the last two sessions. If you add that to what was spent with the major moves money, I mean, it's probably $1.5 billion over the last 10 years or so. But it still doesn't address a long-term need. And I see 16. I don't see a gas tax in 16 because it is an election year.
Right.
I do think you're going to see them come back in 17 in the budget year with some kind of an approach to how to deal with the overall problem, because you have to do it going forward because we can't afford to have the infrastructure crumble.
From Mike Pence's perspective, if he's there in 2017, it'll be a second term. It'll be.
And he's taken the no tax pledge under any circumstances. Doesn't matter what it's for. Doesn't matter what the need is. The irony of this is when Mike Pence took the office of governor, Indiana was known for two things. It was known as the crossroads of America and for Hoosier hospitality, and he has damaged both of them. This bridge was put on the suspect list in 2005. That's 10 years ago, okay? And they waited till it collapsed before they did anything.
It collapsed yet.
Almost collapsed. Before that, you know, they don't want it collapsing with cars on it. I mean, you've got to take an approach that, and Leslie's exactly right, the gas tax revenue has gone down, and as with inflation as well as the mileage, we have got to take a step to pay for that infrastructure.
I think it's important to realize, too, that we have spent a lot of money on roads, but we are expanding and building new roads while the maintenance on our existing roads isn't funded
and
at
bridges.
Levels it needs to be funded. And so these are strategic decisions that we've made that leave us in a vulnerable position.
Right.
All right. New security majors may be coming to the State House. The Pence administration wants to spend $873,000 to place new doors on some entrances to the State House and surrounding government buildings. Earlier this year, the General Assembly approved spending $150,000 to post troopers near those doors during business hours. According to a budget request, there is still a need to cut unauthorized access to the State House. Following a town hall meeting at the State Fair, the governor indicated he is sensitive to the high price tag.
For me, it's about putting public safety first. I certainly am asking our Office of Management and Budget to sharpen their pencils on any improvements and see if we can do it in the most efficient way for taxpayers.
And today the State Budget Committee postponed a vote on that, postponed a vote until at least October. They said they want more information from the Pence administration about the motivation for this and the specifics. Do we need...
You know, there's nothing apparent that would make you think this is absolutely needed. There was a shift, though, in the feeling at the State House that makes most of us who have spent a lot of time there believe there is something going on. They won't say if there's a threat. Nobody's telling us what it is. But there was definitely a shift in the feeling, the way the officers reacted to things, the way they added extra protection at the doors, that I think there must have been something happen that scared them or that made them nervous. I don't know.
Aide to the governor, John Hill, told the Budget Committee that he's concerned about lone wolf attacks encouraged by ISIS.
Well, he's certainly in a position to know these things, and I'm not. So I'm not going to, I'm not going to comment on that. Safety is incredibly important. They've added safety measures for the last 10 years at least, and they've escalated. Now, whether that escalation is in response to something or just an escalation because that makes them feel more comfortable, we don't know. I think until they're more forthcoming and let the Budget Committee know this and then essentially sell the idea, they're going to run into difficulty because we're talking about a fair amount of money here.
And we're talking about a historic building.
That's
kind
right
of
too.
Changes that you want to make to a building that is not only historic and important, but also a building that it's supposed to be open to the public.
That's right.
I think it's hard for us to discuss because we don't have very many specifics, and that's actually what the lawmakers are saying.
And that's the problem, because it's a balancing. Obviously, everybody wants safety, but it's the people's building. And are we keeping them out in the process or discouraging them from going in the first place? And I think a lot of the things that have been done do discourage that. And I think that's not the kind of message we want to send.
Unfortunately, the security matters come with the day. I mean, it's a situation where now you're forced to do some of the things that they've done, magnetometers at the major public entrances, and that's certainly a shift from what those of us have been in that building for a lot of years.
You used to be able to come and go any time of day.
Sure. And then there are those who have passes. And I think what they're trying to address are the ones that have passes to the non-public doors, because people are opening with their passes and letting other people in. And so that's the problem. And that's one of the things. But this particular study, it's my understanding, is not just about the State House. It's also about the State Office Building.
It's the entire complex.
And the entire complex. So it's kind of hard to divide it up. Yeah. But they don't want to be specific about what these threats are. And the legislature going, well, until you tell us what the specifics are, it's hard to justify spending this kind of money. So
but
that's
they're not
the
just
dilemma,
not being
right?
specific. They're not really saying anything at all.
They don't want to say it in a public meeting. If there are threats, there could be some happy medium.
Yeah. All right, before we leave the governor, Glenda Ritz this week endorsed John Gregg for governor on the Democratic side. She's out of the race. Does that improve Mike Pence's reelection chances?
Well, I think Mike Pence is going to be reelected, but I said the day she announced for governor that she would be on the ticket as superintendent of public instruction.
Which she wants to
and
do
And that's
now.
Where she is, because when they had a meeting of the ISTA and they didn't endorse any of the three candidates for governor, including Glenda Ritz, that told her, look, if they're not going to support me, who is? So she got out of the race. Her campaign was a disaster from the get-go.
That balloon went up and down in a big hurry.
Well, I mean, I think that what she was trying to do all along was do the job for which she was elected, which Mike Pence won't let her do. So I think she'll run and be successful again for superintendent. And I think this election is going to be a referendum on Mike Pence. And I think that's going to be to his detriment.
Moving on. The mayor of Batesville was arrested this week for patronizing a prostitute. Richard Fletterman went to police with the information that led to his own arrest after prostitute Randy Weigel-Stevens threatened to go public. Weigel-Stevens of Indianapolis faces charges for prostitution and failure to disclose that he was HIV positive. And Delaney, should the mayor be allowed to finish his term?
This is so sad. I mean, it is really sad. He was defeated in the primary, so his term is only up in November.
He's a lame duck.
And I just feel sorry for him. Period. If he wants to serve out the term, let him serve out the term.
Well, Republicans and Democrats on the council have said that you know, if he's not available, they'll do the job, and they basically have the same position. But he's a leader in that community.
I'd be surprised if he doesn't step down. I just don't know how you continue to serve in that situation. I mean, he's confessed, as I understand, to what they're accusing him of. So I think that's devastating. Like Ann said, it's devastating to the family and to the community, because people liked him a lot in that community.
Three-term mayor.
Yeah.
One of the more bizarre political stories of the year.
It is, but it's a reminder to those who serve in public office that, you know,
nothing's private, that
things will get out. And in this case, apparently he helped that along the way.
Bad judgment.
What Leslie said.
Yeah. All right. Finally, an Indianapolis craft brewery weighed in on the Deflategate scandal. Thousands of cans of Sun King beer were printed with Tom Brady sucks on the bottom. The phrase is stamped next to the expiration date, but Sun King says the jab wasn't on purpose. A Sun King employee, whose nickname is Biscuit, that's all we know about him, decided to change the phrase in use in the midst of Deflategate without telling anyone. One picture on social media led to nationwide attention. Mike McDaniel, is Biscuit a hero?
Biscuit is an absolute hero. Sun King has always been good at marketing, but if Biscuit is not made marketing manager, they're making a huge mistake.
Yeah, we'd like to see what the spike in sales is from this.
Well, they're selling it in states where they didn't sell it before.
There you go.
I mean, there are a lot of folks, you know, New York Jet fans. There's some.
Well, it could become a national brand, all due to Biscuit and Tom Brady, of course.
Yeah, is this better or the Deflategate hats?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question, because the fellow that's selling those Deflategate hats had people outside the courtroom.
Mike Lieber, who used to be a Wish TV intern.
Yeah, I believe he's an attorney.
But we won't hold that against him.
I believe he's an attorney now.
He is.
He had this idea, and he's really taken it all the way. He had people outside the courtroom the other day wearing those hats. So good for him, and it's a home run, but maybe what you need is a hat and a beer.
Or maybe it's a Hail Mary pass, not a home run.
Okay, sorry.
Nice.
I didn't mean to mix my metaphors.
That's
Thanks,
right.
Ann.
Oh, well, I mean, I love it. It's my favorite story of the week. I send it to everybody I know. I mean, you can't get any better than this. I mean,
New England Brewery has put an Andrew Luck at the end of one of their copycats.
Good
luck selling that. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the Indianapolis Business Journal, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.